meeting this morning.
What
happened to the page? Canto 3, Chapter 9. Texts number 22 and 23. The chapter title is Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy. He's very prayerful. It's a long chapter. It's early morning, one day in the life of Brahma. It's following the period of partial annihilation, where a portion of the upper planetary region, including Brahma's abode, still remains, but the middle and lower planetary systems are dissolved. They've entered into an avyakta state, unmanifest state, and Brahma's contemplating his daily service, just like we do. The steps that he goes through is something that we may or may not do. And if we follow nicely, Lord Brahma, the original preceptor of our disciplic succession, we can say our Pitamaha, our grandfather, our ancestral lineage, both spiritual and material, will be in good shape. So this is a very nice instruction. Stepping back a bit, it's Maitreya is explaining this to Vidura, because Vidura has met Maitreya earlier on in the third canto on the order of Krishna himself, because Krishna's left, just finished speaking Uddhava Gita, and Krishna departed the material world. He entered in the prison house of Kamsa and he left in a forest just after he spoke Uddhava Gita. And Maitreya was hearing. Krishna said to Maitreya, very soon Uddhava is going to come. Excuse me, Vidura is going to come. I have some service for you. You all want to hear that? A service directly given by Krishna. Wow. So explain to him what you heard from me as I taught it to Uddhava. So Maitreya went to some remote place. Vidura first heard from Uddhava, then he heard from Maitreya, and the course of asking questions of Maitreya, Vidura's like, he's Yamaraj. He's one of the Mahajans. And so his capacity for learning is like, and yet he's placing himself at the feet of Maitreya to hear from Maitreya. And the questions that he asks are so profound that Maitreya says, this is very profound. In fact, the very same questions that you're asking were asked by the four Kumaras of Lord Sankarsana. He describes the Kumara Sampradaya, at least one line, where the Kumaras descended from the topmost planetary region down the stem of the lotus, into the nether region where Lord Sankarsan is resting and holding upon his hoods all the planetary systems. And they asked these very same questions that you asked. And Lord Sankarsan was very pleased and he gave them the answers. And then those four Kumaras they in turn instructed others, describing this disciplic succession, Sankhyayana Muni and others. And then Sankhyayana Muni told it to Parashrama Muni and others. And Parashrama Muni told it to me, and I'm going to give you the same answer that Lord Sankarshan gave. Then he describes this detail of the morning of Lord Brahma and what he does and what he sees Lord Vishnu, and then he prays. So he has this, as we do, as we get up every morning. I mean, one morning we won't get up, but otherwise every morning that we get up we have some impetus to do something. And where does that impetus come from? It comes from all the stuff that we did before. All the guna and karma programs that we did before, and whatever spiritual intention we have is also from former spiritual cultivation. So we get up in the morning and, you know, we start to do our sadhana. And Brahma is doing the same. He knows that, so his part of his sadhana, not the totality of it, but is his offering prayers. And he's introspecting, which is something that we should do. What is my position? Constitutionally, I'm a fragmental spark. So it's taking the message of Bhagavad Gita and putting it in the graduate study level, like practical application. Here's how we should conduct our day. Teaching through the history. But so it's how to start the day, but it's also all kinds of interesting things about the questions that Vidura asked, like how does it happen in detail. And it's not just information. It's Maitreya is realized, and he wants, because Vidura is vastly learned, he has information already. He wants the realization from a realized soul. That's what he's asking for. And so very kindly, Maitreya is imparting it. So, many things don't have to review the details of the many wonderful instructions of the dynamic of... Here, the part of the problem, there's several. Part of the problem for Brahma is he has to create a place that's going to be filled with misery, and he knows it. In your occupational activity, do you have to do things sometimes that you know it's not going to be used in a good way? And you have, it's like your occupation. Without giving examples. Something. And it could be used in a good way, it could be used in a bad way. You're writing a computer software program. It could be used in a good way, in a bad way. And you know that that's going to happen. And yet you're, you know, what do you do? You can just be detached, say, oh, I'm just doing my job. However people use it, that's up to them. And that's also true. It's not, we're not karmically culpable for how people misuse things. Other people misuse things. But Brahma is very conscientious, as should be we. And he's detailing the position of the, you know, higher to lower positions of living entities that are going to be in this universal shell that he's creating, populating different planets. And he describes the Sakama Bhaktas, Nishkam Bhaktas, Sakam Bhaktas, the demigods, Sakam Bhaktas, those that are just like rituals, but they offer to the Supreme the fruits of their rituals, those that are impersonalists, those that are non-devotees. It's like, you know, he's describing what their position is, and he has a concern. He's compassionate. He doesn't want them to suffer. But he has to create a place in which they're going to suffer. And he details what that suffering is. Bhatirna Krishna Paratakshatova, etc. They're just unfortunate. So he's seeking, he knows the remedy, he's seeking empowerment from the Supreme Lord, several things. He's seeking empowerment to do his service, He's seeking empowerment to administer the remedy for the suffering. And he's seeking protection from false ego, of thinking I'm the doer. Good. And it's every day. And it's, he's Brahma. It's not like mechanical practice of sadhana. He's fixed in devotional consciousness. And every day. He's seeking these three things. So, in the verses, we're going to be reading two verses, verse and purports, and these elements are there, plus some other philosophical understandings that actually are part of the system of protection from false ego. I'd like to understand very clearly what our position is and not forget it. It's easy to understand and then forget. Especially when you start doing things. You get busy and you get absorbed in what you're doing, you forget your position. How to stay fixed. Brahma's showing us by his own example. Okay, so here's the verse and purport of text 22 and 23. Translation. Let the Supreme Lord be merciful towards me. He is the one friend and soul of all living entities in the world. And he maintains all for their ultimate happiness by his six transcendental opulences. May he be merciful toward me so that I, as before, may be empowered with the introspection to create. For I am also one of the surrendered souls who are dear to the Lord. Text 23, translation. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the goddess of fortune. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, and I pray that I not be materially affected by my works. For thus I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. He's the creator. His prayer is to give up the false prestige of thinking that I'm the creator. He's a secondary creator. We're the secondary proprietor of whatever it is that we have. We're the secondary doer. We're the servant. There's many nice things here. In a previous verse, this is the third time that this is being alluded to. In a previous verse, Brahma is appreciating that you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who he's face to face with, he's not like closing his eyes and imagining, he's face to face with Lord Vishnu, his direct source of emanation. And he says, you are the root of the tree of material existence. I and Lord Shiva, the predominating personalities of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, we are branches of that tree of which you are the root, and you are the tree. And that's a material existence. But this material existence is but a reflection of the real tree, and you're the root of that real tree too. therefore, I offer my obeisances unto you. And whatever it is that I do as a branch of this tree is but for you. So, the relationship between the material world and spiritual world is described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Ashvata tree, that's roots up, branches down. It's a nice melody. Where's it coming from? So that's like philosophy. And nobody's like philosophy, but we like devotion. So devotion is how you apply, how you live by that principle. Are you all right? A little antsy this morning. Everything that exists in this material world has its origin in the personality of Godhead. And the post of Lord Brahma is a very responsible post. Imagine if there was a mistake. No mistakes allowed in the post of Brahma. He has to be flawless in the execution of his duty. So he can't be inattentive, he can't be sloppy, no corners cut. Everything has to be perfect. And to do that, and on the scale of what, I mean, in the place where I was staying before, there was this insect, one of those long guys that has like, you know, couple dozen legs on each side and a couple of those things up in the antennas. I was thinking, my goodness. who could create this? Suppose you, like Prabhupada said, ask a scientist, create one mosquito so small he can just sit there and hover. And he can go up and down in any direction at will. And not only that, he can replicate himself. Let them make one mosquito. And Brahma has done that on behalf of the Supreme Lord, all the different species. And he has to know, like, you know, how it works and how to put it together and take it apart. You know, the complexity is the decades of work that the most brilliant of people spent at MIT trying to create artificial intelligence, and their conclusion, I read one article, their conclusion is, like, you know, reading the professors that were leading the charge. The complexity of the human brain is, and that's just one little part of all of creation, is inconceivably complex. We give up. So Brahma's, like, you know, is a great professor of many, many different departments of engineering. You're not only, like, you know, the chairman of the department, he's in charge of all the engineering departments, and he's very, 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 very intelligent, and he knows very clearly that his position is derived from the source, the personality of Godhead. And he does so through the agency of his energies. He's also described in that, in those prayers, the yoga nidra. Nidra means sleep. And he specifically says, your sleep is not like ours. When we sleep, it's ignorance. And when he's yoga nidra, What is it? He is enjoying Rama Devi. It's specifically described in Sri Brahma Samhita and identified here as well. And during that yoga nidra state, the external energy is withdrawn. So he's in mystic slumber enjoying with Rama Devi, and the external energy is withdrawn at the same time. And during the period of cosmic manifestation, it specifically says, although he's in yoga nidra, his eyes are open. Who sleeps with their eyes open? Lord Vishnu does. He can specifically, he says, he can lift Govardhan Hill without lifting Govardhan Hill. He can lift millions of Govardhan Hills, but he appears as if he's one of us and raises his hand and lifts Govardhan Hill. His left hand, not his right hand. The little finger of his left hand. But he's just appearing to be one of us, although he's showing he's not one of us. Because he doesn't need to lift his hand to lift Govardhan Hill. To create one, to maintain it, to lift it, to annihilate it. Therefore I offer my full obeisances unto him, and I wish to serve him. So his impetus, he's understanding all these things very clearly. He's also understanding that even I understand these things, I require the creative impetus from the Supreme Lord, otherwise I can't do. To think of how to apply that to ourselves. I know that I have this training and education, capacity and strength and ability, and I can do whatever the things are that I do. I get up in the morning and I walk across the floor and I go to the bathroom, brush my teeth and take a shower, and I put on I can do all these things and chant. I can do. But the capacity to do is dependent. To do anything. It's just, and he's praying for the mindfulness of that fact, because the other side is he's praying for protection from pride that causes us to forget. Think of the application of these things to our day-to-day life and in an embodied state in the material world. There's a relationship between the internal potency and the external potency. One relationship has already been identified. One is a reflection of the other. Another way of describing the relationship is one is the transformed state of the other. Like the whole description in the appearance of Krishna, where Krishna calls for Yogamaya, his internal potency, and says, my brother, Balaram, he's in the womb of Devaki, I have some service for you. Transfer him to the womb of Rohini. And it's an incredible task, he's very heavy, but you can do it. I'm empowering you to do it. You can transfer him. And then another service. You appear in the womb of Yashoda, and I'll appear in the womb of Devaki, and then we'll both take birth. And then I'm going to instruct Vasudev to carry me and place me by the side of Yashoda, and then he'll bring you back and you'll be in the prison house of Kamsa, where I appeared. And then Kamsa's going to come and try to kill you. And like even before it happened, he knew the whole drama. The script, he wrote the script. And he'll try to kill you, but don't worry, he won't be able to kill you. And as he tries to kill you, you'll fly into the air and become manifest as Durga. He's speaking to Yogamaya and telling her, you're going to become that. Prabhupada's explanation is it's like an electrician that knows how to use electricity to make something hot or make something cold. It's one energy, electrical energy, and depending upon the application, hot or cold. Krishna is the electrician. It's his energy, and he can make something internal potency or external potency. Internal potency is for the service of dealing with transferring Balaram to the womb of Rohini, appearing in the womb of Yashoda, being carried back. That's all internal potency. And then there's an external potency, and he is directing her to do that. So now back to Lord Brahma, who is praying to Lord Vishnu. Brahma Devi is in your mystic slumber. You're simply enjoying with her. He doesn't detail what that is, but he's enjoying his pastimes with her in mystic slumber. And then he says specifically, you are maintaining, I'll read the verse again, let the Supreme Lord be merciful toward me. He is the one, friend and soul of all living entities in this world. And he maintains all for their ultimate happiness. So it's not, there's a distinction between the ultimate happiness and the other kind. Not ultimate happiness. Like Prayas and Shreyas. And the Prayas, the ultimate happiness, is maintained by his six transcendental opulences. The spiritual world is maintained, and the living entities that are existing there are maintained. I mean, the soul is eternal, so it's not like maintained like something breaks and you have to fix it, and that's maintaining it. I mean, like the maintenance department. It's the spiritual maintenance. It's his internal, it's his internal potencies and his six opulences. There's the material manifestation of that, or the reflected image of that. And if you read carefully in Canto 1, Chapter 3, the incarnations of the Lord, because one of the questions asked of the sages is, please describe your incarnations as they appear in this world. At the end, there's this section about vibhutis. And what are vibhutis? Like vibhuti yoga, opulences of the absolute, chapter 10. They're, in this realm, reflections of the opulences that exist in the spiritual world. Like it's the best of whatever there is in this world. That's his vibhutis. The intelligence of the intelligent, the strength of all powerful men, and so on. The light of the sun and the moon. Those are vibhutis. There's a long list of vibhutis. And because Arjuna has asked Krishna, after Krishna speaks the Chaturshloki verses, he says, you're the personality of Godhead. And what are the ways by which I can always remember you? And he gives the his vibhutis. In this world, we can remember him by the reflection of the superlative opulences of the Supreme Lord as found in this world. What to speak of meditating on the personality of Godhead and his feature of Bhagavan? There's pantheism, where people have a conception of God as God is nature. And God can be realized. It's true. He can be realized and appreciated within nature. So he can also be appreciated in the spiritual realm. And we should be clear the relationship between the two. Realizing God within this realm, realizing God that's in the spiritual realm. He's the root of both. He's the root of both. And in the ultimate sense, he's Bhagavan. And Brahma realizes that. Brahma's service for him is in this realm. Sitting in the front row. Anyway. So it's by his six opulences that he maintains all for their ultimate benefit, their ultimate happiness. Ultimate happiness. The other maintenance is for our necessities of this world. He's the maintainer in that case also. In many cases, religion is to pray to God for those things. Our necessities, like Prabhupada says, daily bread. Necessities. But God is supplying necessities without praying for those necessities. He's supplying to the ant, and he's supplying to the elephant, and he's supplying to us, whatever. We don't need to pray to him for those necessities. It's not wrong. Last week, it's like a blur in my mind exactly where it happened, but someone was asking, is it okay to pray to God for those things and acknowledge that? I said, sure. But supposing you have a daughter, your daughter says, Mommy, I'm hungry. Can I have something to eat? Or, Mommy, it's cold out. Can I have a jacket or a sweater? Now that's a nice exchange between the child and the mother. But supposing the child says, oh, I know, they were asking about having arti in their home with Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. And I first said, because they're very new, and I was recommending, you know, what should we do as a family? Do have arti every day. Is it okay if we do that?
Yeah.
Because that's what we grew up with. So, they're very new. I just said, something. Then I could sense that they actually wanted to hear. So I said, are you aware? Just think about it, what that prayer is. It's please supply my necessities. And, things that will bring material enjoyment. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. So supposing your child asks you for necessities. As a mother, you're happy. You're already thinking. They're hungry. It's cold. Here's a sweater jacket. You're already thinking like that. But supposing your child says, Mommy, you're everything for me. Is there something that I can do for you? How would you feel? Compare the two. She said, I get it. So, Arti, where you're saying, oh, Lord Krishna, you're my all in all. Is there something I can do for you? Please engage me in your service. Do arti like that. And that love in the mood of service will become part of your life. And you'll be, by example, showing your child same thing. And be conscious of what it is that you're doing when you're doing. It's not just a ritual. It's an expression of love, wishing to do some service for the Supreme. And that's Brahma's position. But it's not just when he's doing arti, it's his occupation. As we all have occupation, whether the occupation may be the younger members here who are students and they go to school and they're learning something, and that's their task. And our task is something else, or those that are maintaining the household, and that's their task, and we all have some tasks. So having a clear picture of the process of creation, while it's not as attractive as Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, we won't have the proper conception of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan if we don't have a clear conception of the Lord, who is the source of the spiritual and material world. We'll see the karmatma kamyena sharira banda yavat kriyas tavat abhoda jato. As long as the disposition of fruitive intention, that is, I'm the doer and I'm the enjoyer of that which I do, I'm the enjoyer of the fruits of what I do, kriya. Yavat kriyas tavat idam manovai. Our mind becomes karmatmakam, colored with this color, that color, something dark, not transparent, filtered. We'll see the world in a filtered way. And as a result, body after, because bodies are awarded and minds are colored because of fruit of intention. And it's very stubborn, pernicious. It doesn't want to go away. Try to make it go away. It doesn't want to go away. Try and try, and it doesn't want to go away. Try and try, and it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away. We import it into our devotional life, fruit of intention. Be the enjoyer of a little spiritual success. And we want recognition and honor and distinction. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's one of the four anarthas of the heart. Even when we're trying to overcome it, then we become proud that we're trying to overcome it. It's nasty. It's a stain. And, you know, you like to, like, something to stain, throw it out and get another one. But you can't. It's your heart. It's your consciousness. So then it takes besides effort, it takes a very sincere, earnest prayer for mercy. Maybe some of you have read or received a copy of Bhujan's Japa book, and with that Japa book there's a little flip calendar thing, and has different prayers. So I was, fits this perfectly, one of the prayers or meditations that I had been staying with for some last while, fits this perfectly. Sadhana, for carrying one beyond the stain of fruit of intention. Oh, holy names of Krishna. Kindly help me to become free from the burden of Maya and instead take shelter of your mercy or your merciful nature. May I become situated in your, in inserting you in this way. Because chanting is also a service. As in the rest of our service is upon the foundation of that consciousness that awakens from how we chant Krishna's holy name. So we're carrying this burden. The image is there's a row of trees, and behind the row of trees there's a Brijvasi lady carrying a big bundle of something under his straw or sticks or something on her head. You know, bundled up because it's the cold of the morning, a winter sweater, and just walking along the trail, carrying a burden. Like when I was a new devotee, in the Boston temple, the ISKCON press was there, which meant that all the artists and the, you know, a cast of brilliant personalities were there. So every Sunday we had a skit. It was like something the Prabhupada encouraged, and so they did it. And the actors, the artists, were fabulous actors. Bhardwaj figured it out, and Murali Dhar was always the demon, and, you know, Jadarani was Maya Devi, and, you know, they had their whole, like, entourage of players. So one of them was drop your rocks, and so there were two people, there were three people on this side, and then one person standing over there, and the person was carrying his rocks on his head, like a big bag of, it wasn't rocks, but it was like just a big bag of something, and oh, And they're over here, the devotees having kirtan. And they look on the other side of the river and say, they stop the kirtan and said, "Sir, why don't you drop your rocks and come on over and join us?" "Oh, I have to carry, but it's so heavy." And so he moves it over to the other side. "All you're doing is shifting it from this side to that side. Why don't you drop your rocks?" "Oh, I have to carry my rocks. I have to carry this burden of fruit of work." Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanamashatam. It's a great misfortune that this burden of fruit of intention weighs upon us. It's unnecessary. It's unnatural. It's diseased state. But it's what holds us here. We bought into it, and now it's holding us here to this material world. And our capacity to think of Krishna, even when we're doing our chanting or devotional service, a direct Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, we're carrying the rocks. We can't let them go. What to speak of all the rest of what we do that makes up our life? It's an unnecessary, unnatural, unhealthy burden. So then there's activity in the spiritual realm, but that activity in the spiritual realm that we're striving to cultivate is it's also being maintained by Krishna, but the recognition that I'm being maintained by Krishna makes it devotional service. It's not my work is maintaining me and then on the side I have some devotional practice that I do. Krishna is maintaining me and my work, my activity is an expression of service to Krishna. And through the medium of that service to Krishna, Krishna is maintaining me for my ultimate happiness as well as my the necessities of this world. He prays, "May he be merciful towards me, so that I, as before, like yesterday, each day, and our lives each day, so as before, I may be empowered with the introspection to create." The word, the Sanskrit word is drisham, the power of introspection. Power of introspection is like a protective shield against forgetfulness. Because, you know, it's like we know something and we start our activity and forget that something. We know something devotional. We know that our position is Krishna's part and parcel, his eternal servant. And we start to do something and we forget. We start to think we're the doer. But it's not so. We're not the doer. Nakartritvam, Nakarmani, Lokashasrajite Prabhu. Never think that way, Krishna's instruction is. It's all being carried out by material nature. It doesn't even say that I'm the doer. He also speaks in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita that he's not the doer. But who's the doer? Material nature is the doer under the direction of Krishna. And Krishna doesn't drop out of the picture. He's the sanctioner of the material nature, which is the doer, and we're the endeavorer. We make some endeavor, and ultimately it's Krishna's sanction. There are five factors to action. Anyway, so the most subtle of all the material elements, the grosser elements are moved by the subtler elements. Like Prabhupada describes, before there's any action, there's a thought. Always. There may be flickering of the fleeting, but you know, there isn't action without subtle movement. Subtle moves the gross. The subtle elements move the gross elements. And ultimately, of the subtlest of all is false ego. And more subtle is the soul. So to become situated on the soul platform is who we really are. That's introspection. I'm going to share something that I just came across. It's not scriptural, but it ties directly, but it ties into this, what I just described. From this presentation that I made at the university yesterday on compassion, one university where I made this presentation, there was a devotee in the audience that I don't know how they came across it, but they forwarded to me a YouTube TED speaker's presentation on compassion. And the speaker was a Google employee. And his notoriety within Google is that he's created a curriculum that all Google employees take. They must take. It's mandatory. It's part of how to become excellent Google members, leaders within their groups and so on. And he connects two things, and that's he reveals this is the fabric, the outram and protram. It's the warp and the weave of the fabric of his seminar that all Google employees take. One is, I mentioned it in the presentation yesterday, from good to excellent, where there are two qualities that make an excellent leader. Leadership, here's the qualities. Good leaders have these, you know, robust features of these good characteristics of a leader. Excellent is two qualities: humble and take some initiative, or they're motivated. But they're motivated for the good of others. Compassion. So he makes that connection. And then the other reference is emotional intelligence. You heard that term before? Emotional intelligence. Just to give you some idea, Gopal Bhatta, who just happened to be sitting in a discussion where there was some issue that was being dealt with, and Vrajalila, you know Vrajalila, she was bringing up the notion of emotional intelligence. She's a fan of emotional intelligence. And Gopal Bhatta said, I'm well aware I spent $110,000 in my company when that became known to educate my employees to be able to manage themselves with emotional intelligence. Well, in the corporate world, people are spending money for this stuff. So there are three principles. The first principle that facilitates emotional intelligence. First is attention. We have that built into our lives with japa. You know, we're attentive, like controlling the mind and senses. And being attentive, bringing the faculty of chaita, or consciousness, or attention, to the holy name. And to do that, you have to have control of the mind and senses. You can't do it otherwise. You can't. So that's our particular focus. And it was transcendental, because the object of attention is Krishna. A worldly person is attentive to something else. Money. Or something. Fame. Or athletic skill. Become an Olympic person. They have to be very focused. Very focused. Or whatever. So that's the first step, is you don't have control of the mind and senses, you don't have this capacity of attentiveness, you can't pass an exam, you can't do anything. the next is observing the patterns of your emotion with that focus or attentiveness as if you're a third person observing. So detachment and being objective. Just watching the mind. Okay, there's an interesting display of the mode of ignorance. And you can see, you know, it can be, or the mode of passion, or the mode of goodness. But it's not me. You're separate from that. You're the observer. You're the seat of consciousness. You're the soul. And then you don't have to be ruled and governed by the emotions that are going here and going there. It's you're a third-party observer. Then the third is where you direct this emotion, or, you know, at least you can direct your response to it. You don't have to be controlled by it. Emotional intelligence, then, in a nutshell, it's much more involved. So it's like, become a leader of your life before you can become a leader of others. And how many times Prabhupada has spoken about it? Person, not tevya du svarta katimhi Vishnu. They don't know the goal of life, and yet they're leading others. This is the blind leading the blind. And what's the result? Nobody's happy. Or they both fall in the ditch. Because the blind leading the blind. And we're to be Vaishnavas and set example for the rest of society. Here's how to lead your life. We have to be have to follow this principle of being very attentive to the goal of life, to Krishna, and not be ruled by our conditioning, like our emotions, and direct our lives in a proper, appropriate manner, guided by spiritual intelligence, not by the material circumstance or the modes of nature that are impelling the gross and subtle bodies, but act on the platform of the soul. So Brahma is doing that. Because he's in such a state of goodness, he's feeling very compassion for others. He's also very wary, very aware, and very wary of the complications of material existence. Even he's, you know, way up there in the strata of souls, he recognizes, I'm just one of many souls that's dependent upon the Supreme. So I don't want to be caught in false ego. I'd like to be able to carry out my service by your empowering me to do so. And I'd like to, while doing so, be ever mindful of what the remedy for the material circumstance is and be empowered by you to deliver it. That's Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a little package in two verses. Of course, prepared the setting for that from previous verses. Very, very practical. So it's the last part. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is always the benefactor of the surrendered souls. His activities are always enacted through his internal potency, Rama, or the goddess of fortune. So he doesn't have to go worship Lakshmi to get money, as many people worship for that reason. They want the material benediction. He's fully acknowledging the internal potency, the goddess of fortune. But he's seeing her internal potential action is to give ultimate happiness, ultimate satisfaction and well-being, as she's serving the Supreme Lord, the ultimate source and root source of the whole, of the material manifest, the tree of material existence. So his worship is going there. His devotion is going there. His service is going there to the Supreme Lord and his internal potency. Naturally, his necessities are going to be taken care of, and as the Pitamaha, he's going to see that administer the necessities, at least provide them by his act of creating, and others will administrate the affairs. We each have our service. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of the material world, or whatever our particular service is, being a father or a mother or a student, or in this work situation or that social situation or that temple situation or whatever it is that defines our service. I pray only to be engaged in that mood of the humble servant. And then, by this power of introspection, drisham anuspriṣṭāt, anuspriṣṭāt. It's a prayer to please be merciful upon me by giving me this protection, this power of introspection, that I not be swayed, deluded by this most subtle of the material elements, false ego. Please protect me. I'll end with a Prabhupada story. This took place in New York, and in Prabhupada's schedule, after lunch, he would take a very regulated, he called it a snap, a short nap, became a snap. In modern times, they call it power nap. He called it a snap. And then he would go sit at his desk, and in the afternoon time was receiving guests. And if there were no guests, then he would have darshan. And in his quarters. And that was always a very... many times he had to receive people or had to complete his correspondence or some kind of activity. But if there was opportunity, he would receive guests. So one afternoon, he had, you know, the sannyasis and the GBC. I wasn't there, and his servant, but someone described this to me, that Prabhupada was having fun. He was saying, "What's the difference between all of you and me?" And they were like, you know, happy to describe, "Oh, Prabhupada, you're this, and Prabhupada, you're that, and we're not like that. You're this, and you're that." And he was, you know, smiling, but he had a particular thought in mind. So just before it was time to go to the temple room for the evening arti, or at the evening class, he said, "The difference between you and me is you can all fall down and I cannot." And it was, "Jai Prabhupada." Okay, let's go to the class. And he went to the class. And in entering into the temple room, he went before the deities, and with palms folded before the deities, he was very softly saying some prayers. And the devotee that was next to him noticed that Prabhupada was saying some prayers. Then he went to the Vyasasan, and Jai Radha Madhava gave class and went to his quarters. And the person that was next to him then asked Prabhupada, "I noticed that you were saying some prayers. Could you tell me, would you mind letting me know what were those prayers? Some standard prayers?" And Prabhupada said, "I was praying to Krishna that I never fall down and become subject to Maya." And then the devotee said, "But Prabhupada, I thought you said the difference between yourself and us is that you'll never fall down." And then Prabhupada said, "So now you know why. I'm always praying. Krishna, please protect me from the influence of your illusory potency. Please keep me always engaged in your service." Which is the essence of that same prayer from this japa meditation. Oh, holy names, plural. Oh, holy names of Krishna. May your mercy may I be relieved of my burden of Maya, and may I take shelter of you, full shelter of you. By your strength, by spiritual strength, may this weak soul be engaged in your service in this way. By that submission unto Krishna, there's the letting go and the receiving. And both must be done. You can't receive if you're holding on to Maya. And if you just let go, it's a free fall where you're going to take shelter. There must be some, you won't be able to, unless there's some clear sense of positive shelter. And the clear sense of positive shelter then gives empowerment for the service that we have to do, like our daily life, in service to Krishna. One other thought that was as I was reading this verse and thinking about Lord Brahma's position. Some of our devotees were previously involved in the Mormon church, Mormon faith, and their description is that if you look very closely at what the Mormon faith says, there's a concept of reincarnation in the Mormon faith. I don't know if you're aware of that. But they have a sense that it's only upwards. You can't go down. No. It's not. I've had discussion with Mormons about that, and it's not rational. It just doesn't make sense. Whatever their teaching is, it doesn't make sense. Because if you have abominable activity, you're going to go down. But they can only go up. Anyway. So, up and up and up. What's the goal? Read the subtle message. Because I haven't read the message, but they're saying the message is, you attain the position of the Creator. But look closely. It's not that they're saying you retain the position of God, the ultimate creator, but you attain the post of Brahma. I would like those persons who are followers of the Mormon faith to read what Brahma says about his service. I would like our own devotees to read very carefully what Brahma says so we can understand how to execute our service properly, carefully, in Krishna consciousness, guided by the deep wisdom of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because otherwise religion is, you know, looking for material benediction, looking for an upgrade. It remains on the material platform, even as religious. I do this to get, you know, the upgrade and the material status. The family unit is part of the attractiveness. Part of the attractiveness of the Mormon faith is how strong they are in family values. In the world, certainly in America, that has a lot of attractiveness because the family values are very strong. And it helps people maintain their religious practice because the family value helps keep that religious practice integrated. and in their, within their children, within the family. In Krishna consciousness, there's value in detachment. But detachment doesn't mean I don't care about the family. Detachment means I can have a very, like Lord Brahma, I can have a very clear sense of what my duty is, because I understand that I'm an instrument of Krishna. Here's this, in my family, the spiritual conception is, this is a spirit soul that has been entrusted by me to serve. And together as a family, we're, our goal is to go back to Godhead. So the issue of transcendental family life is not rooted into the securing temporal arrangements, but as a family securing the ultimate spiritual arrangement. And we're assisting one another. We have different roles that we play, the husband and the wife and the children and the relatives and so forth. We have roles to play. They're the roles, that's not my, I'm not attached to the conception of the role as my identity. I'm detached from that, although I perform it. In service, the attachment goes to Krishna, not to the material enjoyment of the circumstance and the, you know, the conception of being the enjoyer in this role or that role. I play my role. Like, you know, in ISKCON, I'm a sannyasi, but kiva vipra kiva nyasi, shudra kinanoi, that's our teaching, not who I am. But I have a role to play, and I like the service. But it's not my identity. It's important that I play my role. If I didn't play my role, if I did something else, it'd be a big disturbance. And householders, big disturbance. We have a role to play, how, you know, without detailing. But it's not an identity. There, so there's detachment in favor of attachment to the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is not tevidu svartagatim, he Vishnu. The ultimate goal is satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. And I need to let go of the I'm the enjoyer and fill in the blank. It's I'm the servant of Krishna. And in my service to Krishna includes service to my family members in this role, that capacity, whatever it is. So it's transcendental family life, which is ultimately very attractive. So we need to understand it and live it, practice it, and teach it to others according to our position. Bhagavatam is giving us, it takes some subtle refinement of consciousness to appreciate all of what the Bhagavatam is offering us, but it's all there. Okay, any comments or questions?
Said that for doing any service we need empowerment. So my experience is that theoretically I understand that yes, I'm able to do some service or I have this service to do, so I can do this only if I'm empowered to do this. But then that feeling is not, I don't feel that, it's just theoretical.
And the question is,
so how can we
move from the cognitive to the realized position? Very simple formula, effort and grace. What's happening with Brahma is he knows it also. But the added component is, with great feeling and devotion, he's praying to the Lord for the power of introspection, the protection from false ego, kind of like, you know, positive and negative. It was right in the presentation yesterday, and that's one answer. Another answer is, what was in the presentation? The message was, how do you train character or quality? But your question is, how do you get trained? And the answer is, it was in that presentation yesterday. Through association with those that have that quality. Or have that realization. Associate with those persons. And that becomes your quality. And then there's a way to associate with those persons. And then it becomes a realization. Dadami Bhuni Yogam Tam Yena Mamobi. Ultimately, it's Krishna from within the heart. Giving the spiritual intelligence how to come to Him, giving you the realization, giving you like a sense of the feeling. You're abiding in that message. Through association and service. And Tadidhi Pranipatena Pariprashnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Gyan. His self-realized soul can impart that knowledge. And knowledge isn't just information, it's realization. Through association and service. We inquire, just as you're doing, and submission, just as you're doing, and then service, and that's the part that's remaining. You go to the laboratory of your life and you apply the concept, depending upon, as Brahma is doing, in this mood of dependence, praying to the Supreme Lord, please extend to me this power of introspection, which is like in that little japa prayer or mantra meditation. Please provide this very weak soul with the spiritual strength to serve you in this way. And so prayer is a very important part of life and devotion. So it becomes a bhakti feeling that's properly guided. Not just something whimsical, but properly guided. The two answers that I gave, they're also principle or theoretical. So it really comes down to the sincerity of one's effort and the quality of your chanting. The eligibility of a candidate for devotional service is their sincerity for devotional service. Krishna gives it. And the primary means of our deliverance is the holy name. How do we chant japa every morning? If you chant japa with the required attentiveness, you'll feel something. And that feeling carries over into the question that you spoke about. I'm Krishna's servant and I like it. I don't want to deviate from being Krishna's servant, including what I'm serving. I don't want to deviate from that. I love it. It's a feeling. Anything else? Letting me off easy. Yes.
The three-part thing about the emotional intelligence with attention and the observation. So the second part about the observation where you're not governed by emotions. Can you please elaborate a little?
I won't. I'll just say something little. specifically it's third person, as if you're the observer of the emotion. Here's a non-devotional approach. That's before I became, you know, fully practicing Krishna consciousness. Part of what I was doing, because of the experimentation that I was doing with things, is practicing zazen. And the practice is you sit in a, you know, like a lotus position, that in front of you is just a blank wall, and you sit and just observe your thoughts passing. And it, the experience is, you know, like I did it for 2 hours every morning for like a long time. And it's like watching, in the backdrop there's the sky, and then there's clouds in the sky. And the clouds come, and they go. And rather than interacting with the clouds or your thoughts, you're detached from the thoughts. They come and they go. And it tells you something about your previous material involvement, your karma, and the guna, but you're detached from it. When you become like a little experienced at that, the realization is, that's not me. And that normally I'm ruled by that. It's like my life is that, but it's not me. I'm over here, I'm the observer. And then as the observer, the next step is, I can then take a detached look at what would be appropriate given this thought or this desire or this emotion. Now in our case, we would be governed by codes of theistic conduct or instructions that we receive from Guru and from scripture and from sadhu. And otherwise, we're detached. The backdrop is, you know, existence, and then there's this passing of thoughts. Then maybe, you know, it's clear sky for a while. There's just like, there's not a lot of thoughts. It's just very quiet, peaceful. Then comes another thought, a desire, an anxiety, a concern, an attachment to something. But in a more devotional sense, it's we're chanting, and while we're chanting, here comes this thought or this emotion or something, and then now I'm not doing my chanting, but I'm doing my daily activity, and something happens, and here comes this emotion, and you know, I don't have to be ruled by that emotion or the feeling or the, it's connected to something previous, and the time energy is moving it, and it will also go. Now, what is it, if anything, what is appropriate for speech or action? And it should be service to Krishna. Otherwise, senses are withdrawn. And my mind is staying on, that's the first one, attentiveness to Krishna. It starts with chanting the holy name. And then we can throw our hands up and say, oh, I can't be attentive to the holy name because we disempower ourselves before we even get started. Just, you know, by surrendering to our conditioning. We don't have to do that. We can do that, but we don't have to do that. We can be by Krishna instead. And when you're empowered by Krishna, you can do anything. Anything. As Krishna does Kaviraj Goswami, anything. A layman can climb mountains. Try climbing a mountain. Try going for a walk and climb a hill. Just go, you know, it's huffing and puffing. Climb a mountain. And be a layman and climb a mountain. A blind man can see the stars in the sky. And a fool can understand the conclusive truths of the Vedas. By empowerment. The impossible becomes possible. There's no impossible. When you're empowered by Krishna. So, back to this, you know, see, go to the feeling stage besides the cognitive stage, and empowerment. So I'm making choices. Do I want to be carried away by the illusory energy, or do I want to be empowered by Krishna? It's not like, you know, cognitively, it's not a difficult answer, question to answer. But I'm being carried away because I'm conditioned. But we're making choices to be conditioned. We don't have to. We can choose the other. And we can give all of our yabats, but still we have a choice to make. So our fundamental activity for empowerment is chanting of Krishna's holy name and hearing his transcendental messages from proper sources, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with persons that have some spiritual empowerment, some substance in this area, and receive from them through our close association and relationships with them. And then it's strength beyond my own strength. That's nice. Anything else? Yeah?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the class. Through your example that you gave on Jai Jagdish, I understand that we don't need to pray for our material necessities. But can we pray for proper relationships?
Sure. Yeah, all those things you can. But it's an empowerment in relationships. It's not like ideally even relationships, because relationships can also be material. I want to be comfortable. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I want to be happy. I don't want to be unhappy. So Krishna, please help me in this relationship so that I can be happy. But, you know, the higher is so that you can be pleased. It's, what's the empowerment? What's the goal? Who is to be the enjoyer of the relationship? If it's service to Krishna, that's the greatest happiness. That is the greatest empower to get beyond whatever obstacles may be there. So we can pray to Krishna for removal of the obstacles in a relationship, but who is the enjoyer of that? So our training is towards that end. Now go back to what Nandan said. I may get it cognitively, but then when it comes to the real issue, it's about me. And our training is to go beyond that. That's very confining. It's not that the bhakti factor is weak. It's for service to Krishna. It can be relationships in the community, it can be relationships in the home, it can be relationships with your relatives, it can be relationships in the workplace. But ultimately, Krishna is the enjoyer. That's the devotional conception. So therefore this nice prayer is, I've been liking. Kindly release me, or help me become free from this burden of Maya, of thinking about me. I'm not the center. To think I'm the center, that's Maya. It's a burden. That's the rock. Drop your rocks. For that mudha sense that I have to carry this load, this burden. Instead, may I take full shelter. Give me the wisdom and the strength to just take shelter of you. Take shelter of you means serve him. Not just be cared for like a helpless entity. Serve him. And then I'm weak, I need strength. May I be given the strength by you to serve you in this way. I like that prayer, meditation. So it covers a lot of bases. But it's for his pleasure. That's devotion, that's bhakti. It's a nice teaching and it's a nice practice. Nice process. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.